You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
To another edition of what I call American Exposé. This is Chris Gerner speaking to you. Oh, what is it? The 13th of April, April 13th, 2005. April 19th, the 10-year anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing. Lots of fanfare planned for that on both sides, meaning the conspiracy theory side and the conspiracy implementation side. It's going to be quite a show out here in Oklahoma on April 19th, and I'm going to try and get some people on about this very shortly. Dennis has done some great work, and I've come to a conclusion that the ultimate insider at this stage of the game is Donald Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld is the ultimate insider, and certainly I see here shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, the U.S. tilts toward Iraq, 1980 to 1984. This is not an invention of Dennis's, but a find that Dennis found. And here we see shaking hands, Iraqi president, and everybody's a president for our consumption in America to dumb us down about our Constitution, which we've never lived under. Honestly, we've never lived under our Constitution. Ultimately, we have a dictatorial president. And Saddam Hussein was a dictatorial president, according to many sources. Keep in mind, I saw someone today at a convenience store, and he had some friends of his come back from Iraq, and I don't think he had outright lied to me, but he's stating that the people of Iraq are welcoming our military. They appreciate our military over there. I don't know how to get to the bottom of it. I'm not there, but apparently, according to his sources that are in the military that came home, that the people enjoy what we're doing. I don't know what to say. The Communist Party in Iraq has been erected, according to Darren, and given much prominence in Iraq, which stands to reason. Democracy and communism, very hard to differentiate between the two when you do the research. And so what am I saying here? I don't know what I'm saying, except that we're in another Vietnam over there. The IMF is the situation in the UN system over there with the World Bank, which used to be called the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. Our Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. governor of that. As every country that is a member of the UN system is a member or has a governor of the IMF, and that's because of Darren's research. So here we see shaking hands with Iraqi President Saddam Hussein, Donald Rumsfeld, then special envoy of President Ronald Reagan in Baghdad on December 20th, 1983. So what did we have Rumsfeld? He was Secretary of Defense during the Gerald Ford administration, and here he's the special envoy for President Reagan in 1983. What else happened in 1983? KAL 007, the Korean airliner shot down or forced landed. We've never really gotten to the bottom of that one either, but there's plenty of information claiming that there were many survivors and they were carted off into different directions, including Congressman Larry McDonald, who was a Democrat, who was way up there in the John Birch Society, who apparently had a lot of clout. And apparently the whole reasoning is to get Congressman Larry McDonald. Some say other things, too, were reasonings for doing it, but I think it was to get Larry McDonald. And evidently he was taken and given truth serum, and lots of information was sucked out of him, apparently, according to certain sources. That's KAL 007, the Korean airliner shoot down that Ronald Reagan never really got to the bottom of. And honestly, the president never gets to the bottom of much of anything unless they're told to do so. So Donald Rumsfeld was active in the Ford administration, the Reagan administration. I don't know what his status was during the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, but today, obviously, he's Secretary of Defense. And I see right here in the paper for today, April 13th, on tour of Iraq, that included his first visit to the Kurdish region. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld urged the emerging national government on Tuesday to avoid politicizing the Iraqi military. At a news conference in a shaded courtyard surrounded by young pear trees, Rumsfeld was asked whether Iraqi officials he met earlier in Baghdad had given him assurances about continuity in the senior leadership of the Iraqi security forces. Quote, it's not so much a matter of continuity as a matter of competence, of capability, end quote. He said it in an appearance with Mossad Barzani, who has joined forces with his former Kurdish rival, Jalil Talamabani. Quote, it's a matter of not causing undue turbulence in the Iraqi security forces and not setting back the important progress that's been achieved, end quote. Donald Rumsfeld makes whirlwind tour, people. In other developments, three men have been indicted on charges they plotted to attack financial institutions in New York, New Jersey, and Washington. A four-court indictment unsealed Tuesday accuses, Duran Barrow, Nadim Tamorhamed, and Kazar Sharafi of scouting the New York Stock Exchange and Citicorp building in New York, the presidential building in Newark, New Jersey, and the International Monetary Fund and World Bank in the District of Columbia. Interesting. The three men already in custody in England were charged with three conspiracy counts and provided material support to terrorists. I don't know what to say about that. I don't know the engineering. But the worst problem we have today is the technology behind mind control. We don't know much about that. Although the movie Telephone with, who was it? Charles Bronson, Telephone, was quite an interesting movie about mind control. Mind-controlled assassins. Who knows? Who knows what these individuals are being engineered to do, if at all? And that is our problem. Many things we can't document. We can't document weather modification, environmental modification, the activities of HAARP. We can't document it, and that is where we lose it. Documentation is most imperative. So, also U.S. troops battled arms smugglers and fighters near the Iraqi town of Qom along the Syrian border. Iraqi government claimed to have captured an insurgent and former member of Saddam Hussein's regime. Suicide car bomber killed 5 civilians and injured 4 others in the northern city of Mosul. Always changing sides, finding directions. I don't see too much mention of Mujahideen anymore, but they're all insurgents now. So I'm not certain what to say ultimately about this. I really don't know what we're doing with Saddam Hussein's regime and what happened to Saddam Hussein. Do we have the real Saddam Hussein in custody? How come he hasn't been tried yet? That's the big question. If it is the real Saddam Hussein, is the real Saddam Hussein in Russia, in China, in another country? Where is Osama bin Laden? Where is he resting? And how come we can't find him? Well, there's all sorts of sides in situations that we live today. And the Federal Reserve System is something that is easy to document, and that is the most troubling for me, is the fact that the money is totally controlled to manipulate us into several different directions. Now, Anthony Hargis and his battles are quite incredible, that he's still around doing the best he can. And I certainly encourage you to connect with him and his information, and I thank you, Hunter, for connecting me up with him. He's done some tremendous work. He's connected some incredible dots, but it's late. It's very late, and when you stand up to the monster, you get bitten. And the court system, jail for judges, I think is very, very important to support them. Jail for judges. Any kind of direction to work with is most important. And certainly, Jakuz was something that I thought was good to work with. They just disappeared. I don't know what their feelings are at this point in time. But Donald Rumsfeld is very, very influential throughout the Republican administrations. And the Republican administrations, much gets done for the New World Order system, as is the Democratic administrations. They all have one goal: implementation of one-world totalitarian governmental systems. So this goes on to state this information that Dennis put up. The Iran-Iraq War, which was held in 1980 to 1988, held, meaning an event, was one of a series of crises during an era of upheaval in the Middle East. Resolution in Iran, occupation of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran by militant students, invasion of the Great Mosque in Mecca by anti-royalist Islamists, the Soviet Union's occupation of Afghanistan, and fighting among Syrians, Israelis, and Palestinians in Lebanon. The war followed months of rising tension between the Iranian Islamic Republic and secular nationalist Iraq. In mid-September 1980, Iraq attacked in the mistaken belief that Iranian political disarray would guarantee a quick victory. I'm going to cover a couple more paragraphs of this, and then you can carry it on from there. It is on the website, AmericanExpose.com. It continues by stating the international community responded with UN Security Council resolutions calling for a ceasefire and for all member states to refrain from actions contributing in a way to conflict continuation. The Soviets, opposing the war, cut off arms exports to Iran and to Iraq. its ally under a 1972 treaty, and arms deliveries resumed in 1982. The U.S. had already ended with the Shah, or when the Shah fell, previously massive military sales to Iran. In 1980, the U.S. broke off diplomatic relations with Iran because of the Tehran embassy hostage crisis. Iraq had broken off ties with U.S. With the U.S. during the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. And certainly we remember the USS Liberty and that deception or suggestion of complicity on Israel's side and America's side as well. The U.S. was originally neutral regarding the Iran-Iraq War and claimed that it aimed or armed neither side. Iran depended on U.S. origin weapons, however, and sought from Israel, Europe, Asia, and South America. Iraq started the war with a large Soviet-supplied arsenal, but needed additional weaponry as the conflict wore on. Initially, Iraq advanced far into Iranian territory, but was driven back within months. And there's more to read on this, much more. They have various documents in here, various directions, well-researched information that has been found by Dennis, and many documents to connect dots to what's going on. Absolutely amazing. Well done as far as the research. You can't believe all that's in this piece of work. Here's document number 51, meaning there's 51 documents before 51 that's on this section. Department of State Bureau of Near Eastern and South Asian Affairs cover memorandum from Alan Overmeyer to James A. Plack, United Nations Security Council response to Iranian chemical weapons complaint, includes revised working paper March 30, 1984. Reports that the UN Security Council decided to adopt the text of a full draft Dutch resolution on chemical weapons issue as it is as a presidential statement. Quote, the statement, by the way, contains all three elements Home Doom wanted, end quote. So there's much in here. Secretary of State George Shultz, or actually it's a Department of State cable from George Shultz. What was his position in government at the time? Wasn't he Secretary of State? I don't know. They changed their names. They changed their positions quite often through various administrations and directions. Most important information that it's the NSA archive shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, the U.S. tilts toward Iraq, 1980 to 1984. Fabulous stuff. Very good information. Regarding this whole mess that got us into this to begin with, and I've got information, laboratories urged to destroy flu strain. I'll cover that momentarily. As I opened up the broadcast last night, possible Bush conspiracy in 9/11, now a college course by Greg Szymanski, the Bush administration's complicity in the events surrounding 9/11 has now made its way into the curriculum of a college political science course taught by Wesleyan College in North Carolina. The course entitled 9/11, The Road to Tyranny, was brainchild of college professor Jane Christensen, who saw the social need to explore the many questions about the WTC attacks and the war on terrorism. Being taught this spring, the course explores the validity of the government's official 9/11 story, the many alternative theories advanced, and why the war on terrorism has drastically changed American life. Quote, the events of September 11, 2001, indisputably changed the course of American politics and history. In particular, this course will focus largely on the specific destruction in Lower Manhattan and the Pentagon, end quote, said Christensen in her course outline. Quote, we are examining the official story and will analyze it critically. We will consider alternative explanations alternative explanations of what occurred on 9/11 and how it became a catalyst for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as the attack on civil liberties in the United States. The goal of this course is to arrive at a solid understanding of how 9/11, and we will examine it in a critical eye, end quote. Keep in mind, 9-1-1, 9-11, that is just so ludicrous in itself. That's the thing that just blows me away. What a perfect time to pull it off. The numerology, April 19th, Oklahoma City bombing. Blaming it on Tim McVeigh and Terry Nichols is quite ironic. When you know that there were more bombs inside the building, it wasn't a truck bomb that did it. When you know it wasn't a truck bomb that did it, there are more bombs dismantled inside the building. It just washes the whole thing away. And then they destroyed the building 30 days later. It was shown on major television news feeds at every angle. They showed it at every angle they could possibly show it, the demolishment of that building, like it was in your face to America. It was just so amazing when I watched the demolishment of the Alfred P. Murrah building on April 19th, 1995. And actually, it was a month after April 19th. But the point is, it was like May 17th, I believe, is when it was demolished, the following month. But there were bombs in the building. Ben Parton, General Ben Parton, retired from the Air Force, stated that those large columns, for them to have sheared off the way they'd had to have been wrapped. So it was not a truck bomb that pulled off the bombing of the building. So right there you have a total line of BS. And here you have a mind-controlled individual in Tim McVeigh, more than likely, mind-controlled, upset about Waco. Perfect excuse. What was Waco? A total tragedy on those people. But most American people just write it off as some kind of lunatical crew of people over there that needed to be done away with. Absolutely ridiculous. It was a test case for America, and I think America, in many respects, might have passed it, because I think a lot of people woke up as a result of Waco. Anyway, this Bush conspiracy being a college course, or the 9/11 conspiracy, I wouldn't put the blame on Bush. I'd put the blame on whoever you want to put the blame on. A lot of people put the blame on Israel and the Mossad. I don't know where you put the blame on this. Where do you put the blame on Pearl Harbor to bring us into the Second World War? And there are many people fighting to keep us from going into the Second World War. Anyway, Christensen, the teacher, instructor, said the course is outside the traditional scope of most political science courses, since it is unscientific, relying mostly on eyewitness accounts and speculation. She added that literature is just emerging on 9/11, and she is relying somewhat extensively on alternative news media accounts, documentaries, and videos. Wow. Quote, I think this course is the first of its kind in the country, end quote, added Christensen. Quote, students will be given two exams and be required to write a 10 to 12 page formal paper focusing on some aspect of 9/11 or the war on terrorism. Hopefully we can provide some insight in the many questions left unanswered about 9/11, end quote. The truth regarding what happened on 9/11 has long been sought by a small group of independent investigators who have thus far found many discrepancies in the government's story. As the evidence keeps mounting, those who view the government as complacent in the WTC attacks are hoping the movement catches on at the grassroots level. The new 9/11 course indicating this may be the case. Christensen said the purpose of the course is to question, quote, question all theories about 9/11 and get to the truth, end quote. And how's that going to happen, I say? Along the way, the Bush administration has stonewalled many investigation attempts, basically relying on the 9/11 Commission report, which essentially adopts the government story. However, the 9/11 Commission has been severely criticized for overlooking important evidence, and critics have called the Commission panel assembled bias towards the government's view. Skeptics of the government's account said the recent course offered at Wesleyan College shows that the government's complicity in 9/11 is being questioned by many others besides internet conspiracy theorists and those in the alternative media. The required and suggested course readings of POL 495, which began in January and ends in May, are also a good roadmap for others interested in learning more about the events before, during, and after 9/11. Some of the required text and website readings include they're all in there. Michael Collins Piper, FBI admits no evidence links hijackers to 9/11. Michael Parente, Terrorism Trap, San Francisco City Lights Books, InfoWars, 9/11 Archive, Alex Jones. Michael Chudovsky, The Mysterious Breakfast Meeting on Capitol Hill, Global Research, August 4, 2003. Mysterious September 11th Breakfast Meeting on Capitol Hill, GlobalResearch.com is the website of that. In the paper, listeners, we see here, out of London, thousands of scientists were scrambling Tuesday at the urging of global health authorities to destroy vials of a pandemic flu strain sent to labs in 18 countries as part of routine testing. The rush charged by the World Health Organization was sparked by a slim but real risk that the samples could spark a global flu epidemic. The vials of virus sent by a U.S. company went to nearly 5,000 labs, mostly in the United States, officials said. This is incredible. Quote, the risk is relatively low that a lab worker would get sick, but a large number of labs got it, and if someone does get infected, the risk of severe illness is high, and this virus has shown to be fully transmissible. End quote. WHO's, the World Health Organization influenza chief, Klaus Storr, told the Associated Press. It was not immediately clear why the 1957 pandemic strain, which killed between 1 million and 4 million people, was in the proficiency test kits routinely sent to labs. Quote, it was a decision that Storr described as unwise and unfortunate. That particular bug was, quote, an epidemic virus for many years, end quote, Storr said, from the UN Health Agency's headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland. Quote, the risk is low, but things can go wrong as long as these samples are out there, and there are some still out there, end quote. The 1957 strain has not been included in the flu vaccine since 1968, and anyone born after the date has no immunity. Dr. Nancy Cox, chief of the influenza branch of the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, said her agency was notified of the situation Friday morning. She also said officials strongly doubt someone deliberately planted the dangerous germ or that was an act of bioterrorism. Very, very interesting. Sounds like the opportunity for a Hegelian direction with this article in the paper. No reason to have it in the paper, in my opinion. Hegelian directions. We live a Hegelian life today, people, and that is the big problem. Plan of deceit, crisis and capture. There we are. We'll be back.
Going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
How does a little friendly cooperation help disprove evolution? Find out on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment's host, Ian Taylor.
Altruism, helping one another, is a real puzzle to those who explain the world of living things in terms of materialistic evolution. Evolution is supposed to work on the selfish survival of the fittest principle, so there should be no reason for any creature, including man, to develop a helping attitude. In fact, there is no way to explain how the genetic code could possibly develop and pass on a trait such as altruism. Researchers have studied a bird called the white-fronted African bee-eater. Members of this species help each other, sometimes even at the sacrifice of their own life. For example, one bird will face a spitting cobra to defend another, and scientists have even been puzzled to know how this altruistic trait can possibly be passed on when it often results in death. Another common altruistic habit of the African bee-eater is that one female will put off starting her own family to help another bee-eater raise her young. Some argue that such behavior is limited to birds that are related, but they admit that even adopted orphaned bee-eaters will help their adopted parents in this way. While it is often denied, the theory of evolution has yet to adequately explain altruism. Altruism is a demonstration of that commandment given by our Creator to love our neighbor.
To get a complete set of transcripts from Creation Moments programs, ask about the book Letting God Create Your Day when you visit us online at creationmoments.com or give us a call at 1-800-42-BIBLE and join us again for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
PokerFace.com is their website, and that is their music, some of it, PokerFace.com. PokerFace is the group. PokerFace.com is their website. Listen to them often. Anthony Hargis was very, very interesting with his information. You need to support him with his information. I would suggest you take down his address and correspond with him. Send eight address. All you have to do is send eight stamps. But he has various publications, and you'll get a list of what he has, and purchase them, listeners, because his information is a learning experience for all of us. His address is 2427 North Tustin Avenue, Suite B9, Santa Ana, California, 92705. That's Anthony L. Hargis, H-A-R-G-I-S. And he'll send you more than likely Anthony in Wonderland and details of his case. Very, very important. 2427 North Tustin Avenue, Suite B9, Santa Ana, California, 92705. If nothing else, correspond with him just so he knows that you are listening. If we don't increase the numbers of listeners, we don't get anywhere. That's my point of documentation. Tomorrow night, I believe I'm going to cover the long emergency, what's going to happen as we start running out of cheap gas to guzzle. by James Howard Kunstler. It's going to take 20 or 30 minutes to cover, but it's going to be very revealing. Let's see, Lindsey Williams and his information. That is very, very important for you to connect to as well. Lindsey Williams has a 800 order number, 800 line, 800-321-2900. That's 800-321-2900. He's the author, I believe, of The Energy Non-Crisis. So, and evidently Darren's been covering some of his work, and most commendable of Darren to do so. I thought that he would cover, as I covered last week, the border situation to a certain degree, but I anticipated him covering Border 2012, which used to be Border Region 21, then Border 21, now it's Border Region, or Border 2012. What is that? Does this quote-unquote patriot group at the border realize that our country's been divided into an international zone, 62.5 miles on Mexico's side, 62.5 miles on our side as it started out. Then by executive order, it was extended to 150 miles on our side of the border, an international zone, which most people don't have any clue about. This is the implementation of NAFTA. NAFTA was a done deal. GATT was a done deal. GATT was formed in 1947. The FTAA is going to be a done deal. I'm not trying to discourage you. I encourage you to contact your representatives and say, hey, this is ridiculous. Evidently, there's information that right now, and I haven't covered it, and I hope someone else has, that we can get out of the World Trade Organization. Is that going to happen? Well, I don't want to be too negative about it all, because most of you realize how I feel about all this, having studied it all my life. But Nancy Levant is also very influential in her thoughts to me. And she says it is becoming crystal clear that the time to defend freedom is upon us. That is most important right now for you to realize, that you have to get proactive in your informing of other people, whether they like it or not. Because the time to defend our freedom is upon us, and I've felt this way all my life. But that's just me. As our knowledge of global intention widens, it also becomes clear to those dismantling our Constitution with partnerships and executive orders that we, the people, are onto their deceitful missions. The American people, guilty as we are of not watchdogging our elected officials, whereby guarding our liberties, must now demonstrate in deeds our true beliefs. We are living amidst a globally orchestrated deceit that has overtaken every social system in our country. We are lied to, in principle, every single day, and about everything. Our primary religion is under political and cultural assault. Our medical system is a joke. Our educational system is being demolished from the inside out. Our guaranteed rights under the Constitution are all gone due to executive orders and partnerships that can literally seize all rights, property, liberties, vehicles, and mobility, food stores, energy, weapons, communications, and nature with any crisis, real or contrived. All powers which require congressional actions or vote can now be suspended and military takeover of the United States initiated at any point in time. And certainly she, in her article, refers to the following list of presidential executive orders that deal with national emergency. And certainly, we've covered this many times in the past. It has not changed. Where the government can control communications, Executive Order 10995, 997, seizure of all electric power and fuel, including gasoline and minerals, 998, that's 10998, seizure of all food resources, farms, and farm equipment, seizure of all kinds of transportation, including personal cars, and the control of all highways and seaports, that's Executive Order 10999. Executive Order 11000, seizure of all civilians for work under federal supervision. Federal takeover of all health, educational welfare. Postmaster General empowered to register every man, woman, and child in the USA. Seizure of all aircraft and airports by the federal government. Housing and financial authority may shift populations from one locality into another. That is called population relocation. Listeners, to sustainable communities, you better believe it. Under Agenda 21, well underway. 13 years into implementation of Agenda 21, and that is certainly very important to connect the dots to Chapter 6 of Agenda 21 with the Terri Schiavo tragedy that is continuing in other aspects with other people, other names, other situations. Also, Executive Order 11051, the Director of the Office of Emergency Planning, authorized to put executive orders into effect in times of increased international tension or financial crisis. And where can that happen with the Federal Reserve debt note dollar that says, legal tender for all debts, public and private, period. What a setup. Nancy Leavitt is clearly in control of her thought patterns about where things are going and the priorities in place. She says these executive orders have purposes other than to maintain our congressional or constitutional rights as American citizens. And she says, but why, you ask? The New World Order will divide American people into two opposing groups, those who will accept the new government and those who will not. That's why I cover this. Operation Dragnet can be implemented via the McCarran Act, Title II. This legislation allows the president to legally suspend the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights and to impose martial law in the event of invasion, war, or insurrection. And keep in mind, in my opinion, that's already been done. It just hasn't been done to the drastic direction because we still have our firearms and we're still able to buy food. There's also a belief that more than 1 million American citizens are targeted for arrest during a national emergency. But where, you ask, would the government put 1 million arrested citizens? Let's look at some American history. In 1930s, internment camps to detain Japanese citizens living within the United States. All U.S. citizens who were conscientious objectors and teaching in public schools were to be detained. The Japanese citizens and conscientious objectors were placed in detention camps. J. Edgar Hoover and Howard McGrath devised a plan that would allow President Truman to the power to suspend constitutional liberties during a national emergency. It would empower the FBI to arrest 20,000 American people and detain them in camps. Once a person became a prisoner within a camp, they had no right or trial or appeal. The list even contained personal statistics on each individual apprehended. During the next several years, the FBI established more camps and prepared to seize thousands of U.S. citizens. The revising of the 1948 internment plan was set aside due to Hoover's demands for a more vicious plan. Congress of the U.S. repealed the 1950 Detention Act. Hearings were held in the Senate to discuss the still operational detention camps that had been terminated. The Intelligence Activities Senate Resolution 21 revealed detailed plans for the federal government to monitor, arrest, and imprison large segments of American population. The argument for the continued operation was the communist infiltration, but it does not explain the fact why the internment plan continued to operate and to expand. Also, the powers of the Master Search Warrant, the MSW, and the Master Arrest Warrant, the MAW, continued to be active. The act gave the Attorney General the power to order the FBI to arrest those found to be detrimental to public place or safety. The MSW gives the FBI power to search premises where it is believed contraband or other materials that may be in violation of a proclamation. Items include firearms, shortwave radio sets, cameras, propaganda, and printing presses. Another offshoot of the 1975 hearing was the database housing millions of names of American citizens who had or have no idea of the government's interest in them. And keep in mind the concentration camp program lawsuit that I have in my possession. William Papp's filing a lawsuit against the federal government for its concentration camp plans. I have that, and no one knows what happened to William Papp's, Dr. Papp's. No one knows what happened to him. So she continues, Nancy Leavitt, that is, in 1982, Oliver North and Robert McFarlane were directed by President Reagan under the National Security Direction 58 to use the National Security Council to secretly retrofit FEMA to manage the country during times of crisis. In 1984, exercised a plan to imprison some 400,000 people. The plan was so secretive that well-tenured employees were not permitted into the office of FEMA. The REX program included camps to contain Central American refugees in the case of national emergency, yet included certain U.S. citizens. And there's a list of camps for the REX program, and we've certainly covered them in the past. Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, Fort Drum, New York, Fort Indiana Gap, Pennsylvania. It goes on and on. Vandenberg Air Force Base, California, very familiar with that. Elgin Air Force Base, Florida. Fort McCoy, Wisconsin. Fort Benning, Georgia. Camp Crone, Florida. Nancy continues, it is clear that the number of detention camps is on the increase in the USA, and more than 100 at the present time, and it clearly demonstrates that states within the U.S. have little jurisdiction as far as the federal government is concerned, and that is the jurisdiction of the fact of the war between the states. That's where we lost state sovereignty, the Civil War. And you can see propaganda on the television from the 1930s and the 1940s about the Civil War being about slavery. Baloney. It had everything to do with state sovereignty, very little to do with slavery. Sad commentary. I'm just, you know, at this stage of where we are today, it's 2005. Created crises have to continue. Shortages have to be engineered. The price of gas is at $2 for the cheap stuff. Cheap pump gas, $2 a gallon, and rising, playing around $2, $1.98, $1.99, $2.05, here we are at $2 a gallon all over the country. Where is it going to go from here on out with the created shortages? That's why it's so important to have Lindsey Williams on every talk show host. Every talk show host should have Lindsey Williams on in America. They should talk to this gentleman. He's written books. He's covered information many times with Darren and probably Jackie. But at this stage, we're at 2005. The created crises have to continue. That's why this article about laboratories urged to destroy flu strain is very suspicious. Experts struggle to contain Marburg virus in Angola. It's an AP article on the same page, dated today, April 13th. Disease experts struggling to contain the largest recorded outbreak of the Marburg virus. Said Tuesday it will take weeks to determine whether a long-term crisis can be averted in Angola, where the disease already has killed at least 194 people. It goes on and on. Keep in mind, the World Health Organization is involved here. The World Health Organization is probably behind it, just like the AIDS mess. AIDS, a created designer disease, done in the 1970s, according to William Strecker and other people. So, as we see where we're going today, as we see what's being driven at us in the world and the totalitarian dominance of democracy that's coming down, where does it go next? It's becoming more and more and more expensive to live, becoming more expensive to raise your children. They're taking the government schools and brainwashed and dumbed down. The family unit is being destroyed by design. Agenda 21 is being fully implemented, giving power to children and women. And women are supposed to take orders better than men, according to Gene Soderman, who's been a guest on this show and other shows as well. So connecting all these dots is not difficult at this point in time. So as I skip down here, as Nancy says, as our government continues to grab land, legislative powers, surveillance expertise and technology, and the social control of our children and their re-educations, the question is this. With the infrastructure in place for the arrest and detainment of American citizens, when will the crisis take place that will initiate all the planning, scheming, partnerships, and executive orders to institute the New World Order? Are we to be communist, communitarians, fascists, socialists. Certainly, the minute our constitutional rights have ended or been suspended, we will no longer be Americans. Detainees, criminals by American birthright, and is the crisis for the express purpose of scaring us into global submission? At this point in our history, where we are teetering on the brink of the death of liberty and free will, which we claim to believe are unalienable rights, denial is no longer tolerable. Instinctively, we know that something is terribly wrong, and we cannot escape into our TV programs any longer. This information by Nancy Levant is on the anti-communitarian website, one of our partner websites on AmericanExpose.com. Fabulous information by Nancy Levant. She connects very, very good dots. There's so much information on the Internet today to educate us about where we're going, where we've been, what we're going to be doing in the future, including going to Mars, another unreachable goal from the Iron Mountain Report. Sid Tolbert's Iron Mountain Report is on the website AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K. And I do suggest you listen to Sid Tolbert's report from 1996 again. It's very, very important that you do this one more time because Sid does it well. And that was in 1996. It was a fabulous job then, and a few weeks ago I listened to it again on my website, and I was most impressed with what Sid had to say back then. Absolutely incredible stuff. Most incredible work. Tomorrow, as I said, I should cover this. And this is by James Howard Kunstler. A few weeks ago, the price of oil ratcheted above $55 a barrel, which is about $20 a barrel more than a year ago. The next day, the oil story was buried on page 6 of the New York Times business section. Apparently, the price of oil is not considered significant news, even when it goes up $5 a barrel in the span of 10 days. That same day, the stock market shot up more than 100 points because CNN said government data shows no signs of inflation. Note to clueless nation. Call Planet Earth. Carl Jung, one of the fathers of psychology, famously remarked that, quote, people cannot stand too much reality, end quote. What you're about to read may challenge your assumptions about the kind of world we live in, and especially the kind of world into which events are propelling us. We are in for a rough ride through uncharted territory. It has been very hard for Americans, lost in dark raptures of non-stop infotainment, recreational shopping, and compulsive motoring, to make sense of the gathering forces that will fundamentally alter the terms of everyday life in our technological society. Even after the terrorist attacks of 9/11, America is still sleepwalking into the future. I call this coming time the long emergency. Most immediately, we face the end of the cheap fossil fuel era. It is no exaggeration to state that reliable supplies of cheap oil and natural gas underlie everything we identify as the necessities of modern life. Not to mention all of its comforts and luxuries, central heating, air conditioning, cars, airplanes, electric lights, inexpensive clothing, recorded music, movies, hip replacement surgery, national defense, you name it. The few Americans who are even aware that there is a gathering of global energy predicament usually misunderstand the core of the argument. That argument states that we don't have to run out of oil or start having severe problems with problems with industrial civilization and its dependent systems. We only have to slip over industrial civilization and its dependent systems. We only have... Change glasses, Chris. Hold on. Almost out of time, but I want to give this to you as a prelude to tomorrow. Once again, the few Americans who are even aware that there is a gathering global energy predicament usually misunderstand the core of the argument. That argument states that we don't have to run out of oil to start having severe problems with industrial civilization and its dependent systems. We only have to slip over the all-time production peak and beginning slide down the arc of steady depletion. The term global oil production peak means that a turning point will come when the world produces the most oil it will ever produce in a given year, and, after that, yearly production will inexorably decline. It is usually represented geographically in a bell curve. The peak is the top of the curve. The halfway point is the world's all-time total endowment, meaning half the world's oil will be left. That means like a lot of oil, and it is, but there's a big catch. It's the half that is much more difficult to extract, far more costly to get, of much poorer quality, and located mostly in places where the people hate us. A substantial amount of it will never be extracted. Keep in mind, this is contradicting more than likely Lindsay Williams' information, and maybe instead of covering this, I should bring him on tomorrow. I'll see what I can do. But I'm still going to cover this, because the engineering of shortages has to come into place to bring us to our knees. That's my point and my feeling. As time progresses, we will be engineered into created crises, as we've been in created crises all throughout the last century. The Congressional Medal of Honor is a perfect example of that. Lucifer's symbol for the highest medal of valor, for gallantry. Lucifer's symbol. Satan's symbol. The upside-down five-pointed star, the Congressional Medal of Honor. That says a lot right there. Most don't have a clue about what it means, but you that do the research, you understand what it means, and that is the problem. We live a Hegelian life today. This setup scenario is coming into certain directions. There's not much news going on right now, which means something's going to be created again to bring the burst up in the news media. I wish I could be wrong when I say these things, but and I do wish I was wrong. And that's the sad commentary to have at this point, is the Hegelian life that we live, the Hegelian dialectic to bring America and the people of the world to its knees. Created crises all over the place. Until tomorrow night, God bless all of you listeners, and do your research. Go to AmericanExpose.com. Many directions available there for your continued research. Good night.
Good to see you, and you're just blaming me. Oh, what's the jealousy and insecurity? Good to see you, you're in a misery. Oh, was it always you, just trying to be free?
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you.